Hello and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy and Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. One of the key ingredients in being successful in the service and trades industry today is selling. Selling at a reasonable profit as compared to selling at the lowest price is what adds directly to the bottom line and contributes to long-term stability and success. The cost to make a sales call increases every day. Competition gets keener every year, and failure at the sales level is very expensive. A poorly trained salesperson reflects on the entire organization. Customers expect professionalism, and a well-trained, well-qualified salesperson is a sure sign of professionalism. Our guest speaker, Wayne Millen, is one of the most popular, informative, entertaining speakers in the industry today. His style is plain English. He is one of us. He has been there, starting as a helper 28 years ago, carrying a toolbox, through being an installer, service manager, and dealer. A licensed contractor, Wayne has been involved with all phases of the business. Wayne spent several years selling HVAC products and equipment in the home and has successfully put into practice what he talks about on this tape. His positive approach and practical application lead to measurable improvement in productivity and profits. In addition, he has spent years studying what makes some people succeed in this business of selling and what causes others not to succeed. As a representative of a major U.S. manufacturer of HVAC equipment, Wayne now travels across the country working with dealers and distributors to increase their sales ability. Wayne's presentations have won the respect and accolades of industry leaders across the country. Listen now as Grandy and Associates are proud to present Wayne Millen as he shares with you some of his thoughts and ideas based on practical experience on how to be a successful consumer salesperson in the HVAC industry.
Where will you be? According to a recent study, for every 100 people starting their careers, the following situation exists at age 65. 29 of those people are dead. 13 have annual incomes under $4,000, which is below the poverty level. 55 have annual incomes between $4,000 and $26,000. And 3 have incomes over $26,000. It's a paradox that in the world's richest nation, millions of people live in poverty. See, these people didn't plan to fail. They failed to plan. What we're going to do for the next few minutes is we're going to talk about putting together a plan so that your sales presentation in front of a purchasing agent or in-home is going to be much more professional and it's going to create sales. I want you all to understand something. The man who wants to do business with you can justify anything. So if he wants to do business with you because of your presentation, he will buy from you. There's one key issue involved here, and that's attitude. You have to remember that attitude is extremely important. According to a little saying written by Charles Swindoll, it says, "The longer I live, the more I realize the importance of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than the facts, more important than the past, than education, than money, and than circumstances. Attitude will make or break a company, a home, or a family." Now, the important thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We can't change the past, or we can't change the fact people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable, but the one thing we can do is play the one string we have, and that's our attitude. See, I'm convinced that life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we react to it. You are in charge of your attitude, and that's true of a sales presentation as well. The very first thing we do in a sales presentation is qualify the prospect. It's real critical that we do this and do it correctly. Now, when we qualify a prospect, we're assuming that what's happened is that someone has called you on the phone in your office and they are interested in buying some equipment. The objective to qualify is to sell an appointment and nothing more on the phone. You want to sell a quality appointment with as many things in your favor as possible. How do you do that? You do it by being in control subtly. You get permission to ask questions, and you use the statement, "Could I ask you a couple of questions?" to do that. See, if you ask permission to ask questions, then people will let you inside their head and do the things that you need to do. But if you don't ask permission, that's interrogation, and none of us want to be interrogated. You can ask them, could I ask you a couple of questions? And then you start out and say, my name is Wayne. Would you tell me your name again, please? It's very short and sweet, and it's very professional, instead of going through that profound, agonizing thing when we don't remember somebody's name. Then we start out and ask questions. See, questions are the key to what goes on in a qualifying. What type of system do you have now, Mr. Prospect? Is it a boiler? Is it steam? Is it hot water? Is it forced air, or does it have a fan? Because some people don't know what forced air is. Is it natural gas? Is it LP gas, or is it oil? About how old is your equipment? When was the last time you had to have it serviced? That's a critical question, because when you ask them the last time they had to have it serviced, and they have had it serviced in the last 2 or 3 years, you want to surface that pain. Pain's a great motivator. You want them to talk about how much it cost them to have that service call done. Ask them how many people live in the house. Ask them, are there any pets or any allergies? Two great questions, because if you're going to sell an electronic air cleaner humidifier, you need to know that. Another great question is, do you have any cold rooms? After you've asked those questions, then you want to ask the key question. And the key question is, so, you've already made the decision, you're having new equipment installed. Is that right? When they answer yes, that means you have no more selling to do on the idea. But if they say no, it means they believe they need a new one, but they're not yet convinced. That's a key issue, believe and convince. And an illustration of that, or an analogy of that, is how many people smoke. A lot of the people that smoke believe that it's bad for them, and they will continue to smoke until they're convinced, and then they'll quit. Same psychology applies in a sales presentation. They have to believe that they need a new one, and then they have to be convinced of that belief. You ask them another question. Who all would be involved in making the decision on your new furnace? The husband, the wife, parents, brother-in-law, landlord. I'm a big advocate of not pitching quote-unquote one-leggers. I really believe that you need both a husband and a wife there. But because of the way society is today, that's not always possible. It's not always practical. It's difficult because if you make a presentation just to the husband, for example, you can pretty well rest assured at the end of the presentation, he's going to say, well, I have to talk to my wife. And the same thing the other way around. And it's very difficult for a husband to sell a wife your equipment. It's much better if you can get in front of them. It's also good to know that the people that you're talking to are the decision makers. Early on in my selling career, I made probably one of the finest sales presentations I'd ever made. I sold the furnace, I sold the air conditioner, I sold the electronic air cleaner, and a setback thermostat. I was thrilled because this was a big sale for me. As I filled out the proposal, pushed it across the table, and I said, press hard, you're making three copies. They said, oh, no, we can't sign that. We're renters, so we have to give this to the landlord. See, I didn't qualify the prospect. I spent an awful lot of time, and I didn't qualify the prospect. Now, what do you do after you've got all this information? You ask them their phone number. You ask them their address, a couple of main cross streets. And then you say, would Tuesday evening or would Wednesday evening be better? See, you have your calendar in front of you. You know what the schedule is or what your schedule is. So give them alternate of choice, Tuesday or Wednesday. Don't say, would Tuesday be okay, because that's going to be a say-no question. Wednesday, great. And what time would be best, between 6 and 6:30 or 7 and 7:30? If you say that you're going to be there at 6 o'clock, for example, and you show up at 10 minutes to 6, you don't get any plus points for that. But if you show up at 10 minutes after 6, you've already got a mark beside your name. You've already got a negative. And going into a sales presentation, you don't want any negatives. They select between 7 and 7:30, that's fine. It gives you a half-hour window. You close that qualifying on the phone by saying, fine, I'll be at your home Wednesday evening between 7 and 7:30. Thank you for calling. What took place here? A lot of things. Number one, you showed an interest in their problem, and you're probably the first person they talked to on the phone that did that. You were non-threatening. You asked questions. You let them talk. You were in complete control. And number one, you made your very first sale, which was to get an appointment. And also equally important, you started to develop a relationship. You started to make friends. It's important to understand something about making friends and developing relationships. Mark McCormick said it best in his book, What They Don't Teach You at the Harvard Business School. And what he says is, all things being equal, people will do business with a friend. And all things not being equal, people will still do business with a friend. So if you're not going to make friends, resolve yourself to dealing with neutrals and enemies. And there's no future in dealing with neutrals and enemies. I want to hitchhike a little bit and say one more thing about qualifying, and this really doesn't apply to selling equipment in the house so much as it does as to qualifying a service call. In my professional life, I spend a lot of time in contractors' offices, in dealers' offices, and I'll hear a phone call or one side of a phone call that sounds similar to this. The person in the dealer's office will answer the phone, and they'll say, hello, this is Joe's Heating and Cooling. The second thing they'll say is we charge $35 for the first half hour and $45 an hour. And the next thing they say is thank you very much and hang up. What took place there is that somebody was calling in to get some information about having something repaired in their home. And the person on the phone answered the questions. I'm not telling you not to answer questions, but I'm telling you you need to be in charge of the sales presentation. For example, when someone calls in and asks you your hourly rate for doing service, what you need to do is take control of that sales presentation. And how you do that is you say, Mr. Prospect, before I can answer that question, could I ask you a couple of questions? Now you're in charge of the sales presentation. Mr. Prospect, what kind of a problem are you having? Is this a furnace problem or is this an air conditioner problem, depending on the season? How long have you not had any heat? When was the last time you had service? Again, you ask those questions to build some pain. See, the reason the customer called in and asked you about price is because the only thing they understand about what you're going to do is it's going to cost them too much money. Whether you charge them $25 or $125, it's still too much money. So you ask these questions. You take charge of the sales presentation. And then when you've asked them enough questions, and if, for example, if it's a no heat, you say to them, I would imagine you'd like to have someone out there yet today if possible, wouldn't you? Of course they're going to say yes. You say, could I have your address and your cross streets, please? In 70% of the cases, they'll give you the address and you'll get the service call. In 30% of the cases, they'll ask you the price again. And in 50% of those cases, you'll get the service call. It's a whole lot better closing rate than what you would have gotten by just telling them the price. What contributes to sales success? What contributes to being able to do these things? Self-image is critical. How we think and feel about ourselves is very important. Some of the things we can do to improve self-image is develop excellent work habits, do some of the things that we're talking about here today. This isn't rocket science. It's really pretty simple stuff. It's just using common sense and putting the things down on paper. Associate with dynamic and positive people. That also helps your self-image. So you become like the folks you hang out with. You hang out with great, grand, and terrific people, you're going to be a great, grand, and terrific person. But if you hang out with pond scum, you're going to be pond scum, and we don't need that in this industry. Tape a message or an inspirational saying on the dashboard of your car or truck. I tell you what, I can go into your office, I can go into your homes, and I can tell you the attitude that's prevalent in that building by the pictures on the wall. The pictures on the wall speak volumes about what goes on there. Another thing that can contribute to a good self-image is don't be a complainer. See, the bottom line is people don't really care, because when you complain to them, they're going to complain back to you. Another thing you can do is enjoy life. Develop outside interests. I have contractors say to me, Wayne, I'm working 16, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I'm telling you, get a life. You need to get away from it. See, everything that you do contributes to self-image. How you feel about yourself is everything. Everything you try to accomplish is based on your self-concept. And remember this, you're only going to succeed to the level of your self-confidence. Well, now that we've qualified the prospect, and now that we have got an appointment, now we show up. And now we're going to open up our sales presentation. How do we do that? We do it with small talk. Be you. Understand this. You are the best you on this planet, and you're the worst somebody else. Be you. Be natural. You've already made a sale. You've already got the appointment. Pick up on what's going on in the home, or pick up what's going on in the building when you get there. Ask a question. Perhaps, have we worked for you before, or did someone refer you to us? See, remember, you're dealing with a preoccupied mind. The person's home that you're going into, their mind is preoccupied. They're thinking, who is this person? What's he going to do? Can I trust him? And how much money do I have to spend? So be loose and be relaxed. And this helps you to get inside their comfort zone, and that's where the sale is made. See, in an opening, a prospect must first be sold on the idea that we may have a solution to one of their problems or to their needs or to their wants. And prospects must be willing to listen before we can sell them anything. So in your opening, you want the prospect to feel something. You want them to feel that here's someone I think I should listen to. Here is someone that may have something important to say. Here's someone that knows what they're talking about. Or here's someone that I think I should find the time for. And you do that by asking a question relating to a problem, to a need, or to a want. For example, if there were a way is a great way to start out a question. If there were a way, Mr. Prospect, that you could save 20 or 25% on your energy bills, is that something you'd be interested in? Mr. Prospect, did you know that your neighbors four doors down the street just installed a new system and they're saving so much money? Would it surprise you to learn that that cold room you told me about when we were talking on the phone, we can solve that problem and make that room the same temperature as the rooms in the rest of the house? We want them to feel. And there's two words that are critical here, and one word is think, and one word is feel. If I ask you, Mr. Prospect, what do you think, you're going to tell me exactly what it is that you think. And it's really not important to me to know what you think. It's important for me to know what you feel, because we buy out of our emotional center, not out of our intellectual center. So if I ask you, what do you think about this new furnace, for example, you're going to tell me what you think about it. But if I say, how do you feel knowing you're going to be warm and comfortable in your home, you're going to give me a totally different response. See, everyone has a hot button that'll cause them to buy. And finding that hot button gives you a tremendous advantage over the competition. Finding that hot button is what sales is really all about. And how do you do that? You do it by asking questions. Ask, 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 ask. You got to ask the G-E-T, the business. Now, a couple of pointers here. Have the correct name and pronounce it properly. That's very important. Maintain a confident manner, not superior or inferior. Be neat in dress. Wear clothing appropriate to our profession. I know people around the country who carry a clean uniform in their truck. And when they go on a sales call, before they go in, they stop and change and put on a clean uniform to go into the home. Be clean in dress and personal appearance. And talk with a smile. Don't talk with a monotone. See, what we need to do, and what we're starting to do here, is use value to close. I have contractors and dealers come up to me and say, Wayne, there's no way in the world I can charge $45 an hour like the competition is. And I walk out and back and look at one of their trucks, and there's 12 feet of Romex spiraling off into the air that's holding the ladders on. The truck hasn't been washed since 1992. You can barely see out of the windows. The front dashboard is piled high with junk. The duct tape that holds the window in has been there for a long time. This whole issue is one of perception. If the customer thinks you're worth a lot of money, they'll pay you a lot of money. And if they don't think you're worth a lot of money, if you don't look like you're worth a lot of money, you're not going to make a lot of money. See, there's a whole lot more to closing a sale than quoting a price. Understand this, when a customer or prospect voices a price objection, he is in truth expressing a keen interest in what you have to sell. I mean, if he had absolutely no interest in your product, he would not care one way or the other what your price might be. And he certainly would not trouble you about it if he were not hoping to do business with you. Business on his terms, perhaps, but business. So it follows that your work cut out for you. You must interpret your price by spelling out the benefits you and your product can offer the customer. And one of the benefits is look like you're worth more money than the next guy. See, what you need to do and what he's really asking you to do, when he complains that your price is too high, is that he's not slamming the door in your face. Instead, he's extending you an open invitation to close the sale. The next step in a sales presentation is investigating. See, discontentment creates the sale. And rather than assume what the discontentment is, we investigate to uncover the prospect's needs, his wants, and his desires. And to get his complete cooperation, we first ask for their permission to ask questions. And how do we do that? Could I ask you a couple of questions? We used that statement earlier. Now, what problems, wants, or needs can I find? Perhaps it's something relating to comfort. Perhaps it's something relating to savings. Perhaps it's something relating to safety. And what does my product have that will satisfy those wants and needs? Its features and its benefits. See, in investigation, we identify prospect wants and needs by skillful listening. Listening is the key, and there are five ways to be a better listener. First way to be a better listener, of course, is stop talking. It's pretty difficult to listen when you're talking. Another way is to avoid distractions. How many times have you ever been at home making a sales presentation, and over in the corner of the room, the TV's been blasting? And as you're talking to mom and dad trying to sell them some new equipment, they're out of the corner of their eye looking at the TV. And it's real easy. He said, did you mind if we turn that off? We have some important things to discuss here. Concentrate on what the other person is saying. It's important to listen and concentrate on what the other person is saying so that we can find the real meaning of what they're talking about. And the next thing we want to do is be able to provide feedback to the listener. Ask them back questions when they make statements to you. Turn their words around. That way you get a whole lot better definition of what it is that they're thinking about. Now, there's some things that happen in investigation phase or any time during a sales presentation that will tend to tell us how close the customer is to buying, and we call those buying signals. See, our prospect will, without realizing it, tell us how close they are to buying by verbal buying signals, which is what they say, or physical buying signals, which is what they do. Now, when your prospect says or does something that may be a buying signal, ask yourself these two questions. First question is, why did he say it? And number two, does he mentally own it? See, if you don't stop selling on a buying signal, you may lose the sale. The prospect may be telling you they do not need any more reasons for buying. But here's what happens in a typical selling situation. We've gone through our sales presentation, we've given them the price and so on, and the customer says, well, can you install it by this weekend? And we're so glad and we want to please the customer and we want to make the sale, and we say, well, yeah, we can do that. And the customer says, well, I'll think about it. I'll let you know. Or the customer will say, do you have this in stock? And you say, yeah, we have it in stock. And the customer say, well, I'll think about it. I'll give you a call. What happens is you don't want to give something away without getting something back. When a prospect says to you, can you install it by this weekend? Your reply to that is, Mr. Prospect, if we can install it by this weekend, do you want to go ahead with this today? Now you're going to get commitment. It takes the heavy breathing off whether or not they're going to do it and puts it on when they're going to do it. If they say to you, do you have the equipment in stock? You say to them, Mr. Prospect, if we have this product in stock, do you want to go ahead with this tonight? See, what you do is you get in this situation and you get commitment. Minor decisions carry major commitments. This avoids objections and it gets commitment. And I've said that word three times because I want you to understand this commitment is what it's all about. It takes all the heavy breathing and so on off of the decision to buy and puts it on a minor decision, which is when to buy. It clarifies what they're asking and why they're asking it. And when they answer your question, they make a minor commitment and tie themselves down. See, we all want three things when we buy something. We want it better, we want it faster, and we want it cheaper. And when your prospect talks to you about price, he gets to select one of the three. If he wants it cheaper, it won't be better and faster. And if he wants it better, it won't be faster and cheaper. And what we want to do is get them off of the price issue and onto some other issues. It's kind of like the lady I met in Dallas that married the millionaire. She says, Wayne, I didn't want to marry him for his money, but I couldn't think of another way to get it. I was talking to her husband a little while after that. I said, what were you before you married your wife? He said, I was a multi-millionaire. Buying signals carry a whole lot of weight, and some of the physical buying signals are resting head on hand. If your prospect rests his head on his hand, that's a positive sign. Prospect's paying attention, enjoying what you're saying. He's interested. Go ahead and close. Lighting a cigarette's another positive. Go ahead and close the sale. If your prospect is stroking his chin, he's trying to make a decision. Ask him to sign the order and then shut up. If he's rubbing the back of his neck, that's a negative. The prospect's not agreeing with what you're saying. If he's rubbing his nose, he does not believe you. He thinks you're lying. And if his wife looks down, that's a negative. She's not buying. Now, if someone starts to pat their hair or fondle their hair, that's a positive. Go ahead and close. Those are all physical buying signals. And there's some verbal buying signals. One of those is, how soon can you install it? Or, if we decide, when can you start? And a great one is, I really should shop around. That is a verbal buying signal. What he's really saying is, I'm tired of all these people trucking through my house. Give me enough reasons, build your value high enough, and I'll buy from you. Another one is, well, Jan, what do you think? He's saying it to his wife. He's bought, and all the pressure's on her now. One more thing about verbal buying signals, and that is, they will sometimes come in the form of an interruption, requesting more information. Another area of selling that's very important is trial closes. A trial close will give you the opportunity to find out exactly how the prospect feels about the product or the service. The reason a trial close is such a win is because a trial close asks for an opinion, not a decision. Some trial closes that you can use are, if you were to, in your opinion, do you feel? How many of you have bought a new car? And you're sitting there waiting for them to cut the price or whatever the issue is, and a salesman says to you, if you were to buy the new Riviera, would you get the CD player? And you say yes, which means you just bought a car. Or if the salesman says, in your opinion, would you rather have this color or this color? And you say, well, I'd rather have this color. You just bought a car. See, it's a matter of having the guts to ask those questions. You have nothing to lose. You can never lose asking someone's opinion. Let's talk a little bit about selling features and benefits. You must sell every feature and every benefit of every product you have as though it were exclusive. Because if your competition fails to bring it up, you will then have it exclusively in the eye of the prospect. It's very, very important that you learn your product. Product knowledge cannot be overstressed. And when you have the product knowledge and you can talk to them about all the features and the benefits of those features, and the competition does not, and that happens many, many times, in the eyes of the prospect, you're the only one that has it. See, that builds your value higher and higher and higher. A typical scenario in in-house selling is you figure up the price of the piece of equipment and you say to the prospect, Mr. Prospect, your new furnace completely installed is going to be $2,000. And the prospect comes back to you and says, I've already got a price of $1,700. And what happens at that point in time in many, many situations is the salesman is anxious to make a friend and anxious to make a sale. He makes the fatal mistake of saying, I'll split the difference with you. And in the mind of the prospect, you've just shot yourself in the foot. Reason being is the prospect saying to himself, if I hadn't said anything, this guy would have beaten me out of $300. And if you've ever traveled in a country or you've ever dealt any place where you can negotiate price, understand that if you can get someone to compromise their price once, they'll compromise their price the second time. When the prospect tells you that they've already got a price of $1,700, they didn't tell you they weren't going to buy. What they really non-verbally said is, I'm going to spend $1,700 with somebody. And if you build the value of your product high enough, I'll spend another $300 with you. The hard part's done. There's some sales disciplines that we need to think about and talk about. After each presentation, ask yourself some of the following questions. Was I right or wrong in my selection of the benefit that would best serve the prospect's needs? Did I overcome objections to the satisfaction of the prospect? Did I make a good first impression? And if I did not, how do I correct that? What can I eliminate from my presentation that is useless? And what new information do I need to make more sales? Was I too high pressure or too low key? I've had people come up to me and say, Wayne, I can't do this kind of a sales presentation. This is high pressure. And I counter with, high pressure selling is when you're interested in putting commissions in your pocket and you don't care if the prospect benefits or not. See, if you believe in your heart of hearts that that prospect will be better off with a new furnace than without it, then you certainly need to do all that you can do to see that they wind up owning it. That's not high pressure. That's doing the job for your client. I've been in homes and looked at equipment, and I told the prospect, you don't need new equipment. It's not necessary. And they decide they want to go ahead and buy it anyway. That's fine. But understand what high pressure is. High pressure is driving commissions into your pocket. It's not doing what's right for the customer. Did the prospect have a good reason for not buying? On every sales call, there's a sale made. You convince them they can and should, or they convince you they can't and won't. So did you have a good reason, or did he have a good reason for not buying? And where were you weakest in your presentation? And that's the area you need to practice on. What you need to do with your sales presentation is put down an outline. You need to go into a room and close the door and not come out until you have put down a complete outline of your sales presentation. And then you have a path to go on when you go into the home to start to sell. Too many people fly by the seat of their pants. They don't know which direction they're going to go. They don't know what they're going to say. They don't have answers for objections. Write out your sales presentation, because understand that all business success rests on something labeled sale. Next thing we're going to talk about is need to be right. And this is so critical. And if you don't take anything else out of this tape today, take this out. Need to be right is why some things that should happen don't, why other things that shouldn't happen do, and why both take a whole lot longer than necessary. A person's need to be right could be your strongest ally. A lot of deals get done simply because someone's need to be right is so involved that psychologically they cannot afford to get it done. What am I talking about when I talk about need to be right? Think back. When we were very young, we were taught that if we lived on the right side of the tracks, we ate the right food, we wore the right clothes, and went to the right school, hung out with the right kids, rode the right bicycle, we were going to be successful. We were going to make it. But if we didn't do those things, we weren't going to make it. And we started out very early in life fulfilling our need to be right. We do it a lot of ways. Several years ago, there was a fellow, I believe his name was Brian Wilson, who laid down in front of a train out in California because he didn't believe that train should be calling radioactive waste. The train didn't care, and it ran over him and cut off his legs, and he gave up his legs in order to be right. If your mind will let you do that, think what happens in a sales presentation. For example, you quote a price on a new piece of equipment, and you say your new piece of equipment installed is $1,500. And a prospect says to you, that's a lot of money. And you say, no, it isn't. Who's right? Actually, you're both right. So you talk about $1,500 every day, and it doesn't mean much to you after a while. But the prospect doesn't hear that number every day, especially when that money's coming out of his pocket. So that means a lot to him. So he's right. So we have two forces equal, opposing one another. The prospect's saying it's a lot of money, and the salesperson saying, no, it isn't. How do we win? How do we make this a win-win so that the prospect winds up with the product and that you wind up with the sale by giving up your need to be right? And a real easy way to handle that is saying, Mr. Prospect, in addition to the fact it's a lot of money, are there any other reasons you wouldn't want to go ahead with this tonight? Totally disarms them. You've let them be right, and you've moved on down the road. As we spoke earlier, the only thing you have in common with the prospect about what you're doing, because it's a technical product, is price. That's the only thing they can talk to you about. Remember something. Nothing blocks your insight into other people more than your own need to be right. And it's difficult to be effective if your conclusion about what makes someone tick are based on your need to be right. I'm suggesting you give it up. Just totally give it up. Let's now talk a little bit about objections. Objections generally are the prospect's inability to make a decision. They're not a rejection to buying. There's several different things that we consider objections, and they really all aren't. One is a stall or a put-off, and this is used to delay making a decision. It's used to throw the salesperson off guard. It's used to get him talking about something else. Isn't it interesting how in a sales presentation we'll wind up talking about last night's basketball scores or Sunday's football game? Guess who was in charge of that part of the sales presentation? Then there's a condition. This is, in the mind of the prospect, an actual reason why something has to be done before the sale is completed. An example of a condition is, I must pass this proposal before my attorney before I sign it. And then there's an objection. An objection is an expression of opposition. It's not a rejection to buying. It's an expression of opposition to the service, to the product, or to the price. Now, the first time you get an objection and you're not closing, ignore it, unless you get a price objection. See, if you get a price objection and you ignore it, that will become the predominant thought in the prospect's mind. So what you have to do is handle that. And one of the ways you can handle that is, say, Mr. Prospect, I'm coming to price, but first let me show you the features, the benefits, and the value. Or you may say the price varies depending on the features and the accessories you select. Or you may say the price depends on which model serves your needs best. Let me show you the features, benefits, and values of these two models. If the objection is important, the prospect will bring it up again. Now, objections take several forms. There are valid objections, which make a whole lot of sense to him. There are invalid objections, which are used to throw you off track. And there are prejudiced objections, which are prejudiced in his own mind. And the best time to handle these objections? Well, sometimes you never handle them, unless they come up again. Sometimes you handle them later. And sometimes you handle them before. If you know that you're getting a specific objection in your presentation, build in handling that in your presentation. And sometimes you handle objections right now. Those are all judgment calls. I can't sit here and tell you when to do that. You decide that when you're in front of the prospect. And 99 times out of 100, your decision will be the right one on when to handle them. See, the common denominator for success is doing the things that unsuccessful people don't like to do. And the price of success is a whole lot less than the price of failure. Now, when you get an objection, rather than answer, acknowledge. A few minutes ago, we talked about need to be right. Remember, the mind does not want to be wrong. And there's some ways you can answer these objections. One of the ways is you can say, I understand, or I agree, or you can say, certainly. Or you can say, Mr. Prospect, I can see how you feel. Or you can say, that makes sense. Or you can say, and. And is a great, great way to handle an objection. The prospect will say to you, your price is too high. And the room's quiet, and you say, and? And remember the old saying, silence is golden, my mouth I'm a-holdin'? If you sit there long enough, he will give you any other objections. And if you say and you sit there and don't say anything, he may come back and say, well, other than the price is too high, there are no other objections. Now you know exactly what to focus in on. And once you have asked these questions, for example, I understand how you feel about that. Many people have felt that way until they understood blah, blah, blah. And after you have asked the question and made the statement, now you explore. Mr. Prospect, obviously you have a reason for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what it is? The person that any of us would rather hear speaking any time is ourselves. We all think that everything we have to say is great, grand, and terrific. Should all be written down for the ages. So if we all feel that way, guess what? Your prospect feels that way. Let him talk. When he's talking, he's buying. All of what we're talking about here today deals with treating the customer right. Now, treating the customer right does not mean you give away your profit. What it does mean is you have the customer's best interest at heart, that the product is exactly what you say it is, that you deliver it when you promise, and that you price it fairly. If you sell one product, you deserve one profit. If you sell two products, you deserve two profits. If you sell three products, an air conditioner, a furnace, and an air cleaner, you deserve three profits. You deserve a profit on everything you do. And the name of the game is to make money, not to see who can be the cheapest. But see, we do some things, and there's some things that happen to us that are called self-defeating behaviors. And these are some of the reasons we fail to achieve our goals. Negativism is one of those self-defeating behaviors. Essentially, we're a negative society. Watch the news on TV tonight, and specifically watch the weather. And what are they going to tell us? 20% chance of rain. But they don't tell us there's an 80% chance of sunshine. Another reason we fail to achieve our sales goals is disorganization, or doing things at the last minute, or we have unrealistic expectations. Some of us procrastinate. We put things off and put things off. And some of us have a fear of rejection. Some of us have difficulty in making a decision. I can go out and ask a contractor, do you have trouble making a decision? And he'll say, well, yes and no. Inability to finish tasks. Negative self-concept. And here's the one that really surprises me. Industry Week magazine, some time back, published an article, and the title of the article is The Fear of Success, that we essentially in this country are afraid to be successful. And this article goes on to state that Gary Hart disease, some call it, a smart man makes bizarre mistakes that are simply too stupid, and he self-destructs just as he's about to attain his long-sought goal. Fear of success is a very subtle phenomena that shows up as a repeated unconscious self-destructive impulse. It often manifests itself in mistakes by otherwise bright people that are just too stupid to be stupid. Don't be afraid to be successful. See, your success breeds success in other people. It breeds success in the people that work for you, and it breeds success in the industry. One of the things that we can do to make ourselves successful is to put together an evidence manual. An evidence manual is something that tells the customer something about you. Now, we all know that you and I wouldn't lie, but the customer doesn't always know that. And what they want is a third-party reference, and an evidence manual gives them that. See, the two most important areas in selling are trust and confidence. And the evidence manual will add credibility to you, to the company, and to the product or service. The evidence should relate to you as a person and to you as a sales representative. The evidence relating to you as a person can be certificates, high school diplomas, college diplomas, perhaps military discharges or hobbies or awards. And to you as a salesperson could be certificates of training or sales achievements or testimonial letters with pictures of satisfied customers. I've had salespeople say to me, Wayne, I never get any testimonial letters. And I tell them the reason is you don't ask for them. I'm sure that you've done a job and you've done it very well, and a customer said, hey, we're really happy with what you've done here. We like the way the sheet metal is installed. We like the way you did this, or we like the way you did that. And what you do is you go back to your office and you type essentially what that person said on a piece of paper. You call them up and you go back and see them. And you say to them, Mr. Prospect, the last time we talked, you said this to me. If you would be so kind as to put this on your own personal letterhead over your signature, so that I could show other people the work that we do, I would be most grateful. And guess what? People will do it almost every time. Another thing an evidence manual does is gives credibility to the company. If there are any awards that have been received by the company, put them in there. Or news articles relating to sponsorships by the company. Or charitable functions or sports teams. How about putting something about product in your evidence manual, news releases or consumers' reports? Or you may add a credo toward the back that reads something like, there is hardly anything in the world that someone cannot make a little worse and sell a little cheaper. And the people who consider price only are this man's lawful prey. Another important area is communications. Two-thirds of all errors are due to poor communications. Communications is what makes everything work. Quality communication occurs when your feelings, your thoughts, your ideas, and your experience are stated so they are understood. If your message is not clear and understood, nothing's going to happen. Now, there are three methods of communication. Number one is passive communication, which is jewelry and watches. I recall several years ago, I was hiring a guy for an entry-level position. He came to work for me on the first day, and he had his shirt unbuttoned down to about halfway, and he had on his Mr. T starter kit. And he and I went in the office and talked about that. And I said, you know, that may work good at the single bar, but you're going out there in an entry-level position that doesn't fit in. And he didn't see it my way, and I didn't see it his way. But seeing as how he was working for me, I broadened his employment opportunities. Another method of passive communication is the kind of vehicle you drive. Is it in good repair? Is it clean? And another type of passive communication is facial hair. How about clothing? What kind of a message does that send? Now, there's verbal communication, which is the spoken word, what is or is not said. And there's nonverbal communication, which is body language, gestures, tone of voice, how fast we talk, eye contact, and how we walk. Now, there's some communication rules that we need to follow. And number one, do not embarrass the customer. This isn't a game of wits. We're there to do the customer a service. And don't compare your abilities to the customer's. After all, if the customer had your ability, there'd be no need for you to be there. And do not intimidate the customer, and do not chisel your opinion in granite. It goes back to need to be right. Do choose the right time and place. Do give solutions. Do be descriptive, and be sure the customer is listening. And you be a good listener. Listen to the voice inflection. Watch the body language. Look at the gestures and see the facial expressions. A very, very powerful listening tool is questions. And when I say that, I mean, don't use say-no questions. Questions that put the customer in a corner. Are you going to buy this or aren't you? Remember, the objection we have to concepts such as those expressed in winning through intimidation is that none of us enjoy being the intimidee. Now, there's some communication myths as well. The first myth is open and honest communication is always best. Open and honest communication is fine at the right time, at the right place, and with the right person. Another communication myth is the customer doesn't understand. What that means is someone was misinformed or someone didn't get their way. It's a cop-out. I did not relay the information accurately or in words the customer understood. Another communication, and I hear this one, is people come up to me and say, Wayne, I can't communicate. Well, communications don't stop. We send messages all the time. There's passive communication, there's verbal, and there's nonverbal communication. Another communication myth is words are specific. Words are not specific. If you and I agree a word has a specific meaning, then it does. Otherwise, it does not. Did you ever notice how you have customers that never say no, but they never say yes either? See, there's four reasons why customers don't do what you want them to do. They don't understand what you want them to do. They don't believe what you tell them. And they think that there might be a problem down the road if they buy your product. Or there really are problems with buying your product. And you cannot treat all of those the same. If they do not believe what you're saying, that's completely different from not understanding what you're saying. For example, one of the most repeated objections, I'm not ready to buy now, or I want to think about it. What do those really mean? Do they mean they don't have the money right now? Do they mean they don't need it right now? Or does it mean he's saying that to get you off the phone and out of his office? Or is he saying that because he does not believe the product will do what you say it will do? Your task as a sales professional is to find out what he means. Does that mean in the future he will buy? And if you ask him that question, now he has to give you a yes or a no answer. That way you identify if you are dealing with a time problem or a problem of not believing what you say. And don't give up here. A lot of people do. Continue to the next step. If it's not a good time to buy now, when would be a good time to buy? Get to the root issue. Don't say, okay, I'll call you in a couple of weeks after you've had time to think about it. Fact is, the guy's not thinking about it at all. He's relieved to have you out of his face. Another example is when a customer says something like, wow, that sure is a lot of money to pay. One approach is to say, yes, it's high priced because of the value in it. And another approach is to say, is that a problem for you? If they say yes, then okay, you're dealing with the problem. And what about the call that never ends in a sale? I've been with salespeople who have called on an individual customer every couple of months for 2.5 years, and the customer has never bought anything. When are you going to ask the customer what you're doing wrong? You've been calling on them for 2.5 years. You've never sold them anything. Each time they listened to your presentation and liked your product, but haven't bought anything. If you ask what you have to do to get them to buy your product and they say they are never going to buy, then at least you know you don't have to waste any more of your time. Again, as we talked earlier, all business success rests on something labeled a sale. See, selling is the oldest economic exchange activity known to man. It predates everything except agricultural production for self-consumption. It even predates buying. It's important to remember, customers do not care about you, and they don't care about your cost. They care about their cost. When you say, I can't provide the product at that price, my cost is more than that, you've just shot yourself in the foot. You just said in so many words, you're not going to buy from me. You have, in effect, affirm the competitor in the mind of the prospect. To help eliminate some of those problems, we're going to talk about some sales scripts. When a prospect says, that costs too much, you as a salesperson can say, compared with what? For example, a Porsche costs more when compared with a Taurus, but look what you get. If the prospect says, I don't know if we can afford that, you as a salesperson says, does that mean you don't have that much on hand right now, or does it mean the monthly payments are too high? Or, what will we have to do to go ahead with this today? How far apart are we? If the prospect says, what do you think of so-and-so company? You as a salesperson can say, so-and-so company is an excellent company. However, many of the people that are now using our company once used so-and-so company. Would you like to know the reasons why? If the prospect says, man, that's a lot of money. You as a salesperson can say, you are right, Mr. Prospect, it's not cheap. However, there are some very good reasons for the price, and I would like to explain some of them to you. Or you can say, yes, Mr. Prospect, we are the highest priced dealer in this market, and we are busier today than we've ever been. Let me share with you why so many people are using our company, even though we charge more. See, one of the things you want to stay away from is offering deals. When you offer a deal, you focus their attention completely on price. Prospect says, that's more than we expected to pay. You can say, yes, Mr. Prospect, but you know with our company you get more than you pay for. Did you ever get anything cheap that was any good? If you do want a good quality job installed correctly, and I believe you do, perhaps you can consider adjusting your budget in other non-critical areas. See, understand something, it's always more than they expected to pay. If the prospect hesitates, can't seem to make a decision, what you say is, are you interested in saving money? Are you interested in more comfort in your home? Are you interested in lower energy bills? If you were to start saving money, when do you think would be a good time to start? See, every yes increases desire, and every no decreases desire. No's throwing water on the fire. Yes is throwing fuel on the fire. By going through some of these sales scripts, what we want to do is be able to not confuse the ability to pay with the willingness to pay. See, we can almost always find the money if we want the product badly enough. But whether we're willing to find the money is another matter. In closing, I would like to just leave you with this thought. Selling Magazine, there was an article written by John O'Toole, Logic of the Emotional Sell. And it goes on to say, I read somewhere about a blind man standing on a New York street with his cup extended. Around his neck was a cord holding a sign, and this particular blind man seemed to attract more attention than most. Passers-by would slow their hectic pace to read the sign, then drop something into the cup. For the sign did not merely say, I am blind. It read, it is spring, and I am blind. Good luck. Good selling.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. along with this month's tape, you also receive several other things. There is a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There is a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The response card is postage paid, so please write down a few comments and drop it in the mail. We would love to hear from you. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.